Welcome to a special edition of Path to Zero, recorded from the Reuters Global Energy Transition Summit in New York City. Now, here's your host, Tucker Perkins.
While we're here at the Reuters Global Energy Transition Summit, we've been fortunate to talk to business leaders who are leading the way for the world's essential industries to decarbonize. One of those innovators is Peter Zornio, Chief Technology Officer with Emerson, the global technology, software, and engineering powerhouse. It's great to talk to you, Peter. Thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
You're speaking here in New York at the Reuters Global Energy Transition Summit. Can you share with us a few of the things that you'll be talking about?
Sure. I think our main message to the attendees there is that, you know, at least in the field of automation, things are ready to go in terms of helping with the energy transition, whether it's helping existing energy producers lower their carbon footprint, lower their energy consumption, or helping new types of technology, whether it's a new energy source like hydrogen, get going very quickly, you know, and get their new startups going fast, or also some of the new processes in circular economy, or the new recyclable kind of technologies that are coming out, whatever it is. We're ready to help in getting them off to a good start in a production level kind of scale.
And I know today almost artificial intelligence is all over the news, impacting everyone's prospective business processes. Tell us how AI and automation differ.
Sure. So usually when we use the term automation, we're talking about the sensors, the control elements, the control software and systems that basically provide a let's call it, base level of control that allows you to actually operate a plant safely, reliably, make it perform as it was designed. But everybody wants more than that, right? Everybody would like to optimize the production of the facility. They'd like to optimize their costs, their quality. Now they want to optimize their carbon footprint. And that's where, you know, a number of advanced technologies come into play. And when you say AI, it was actually kind of funny for me. I remember when that sort of became in vogue like 6 years ago or whatever. And I always chuckle to myself because we've been using a lot of the techniques that are in what I'll call numerical AI for 30 years. Things mm-hmm. like, you know, neural nets and models. We didn't know enough to call them digital twins. That's a much cooler term. I wish I'd invented it. But, you know, applying numerical models of a process or how it responds to provide optimization. These are all things that we've applied for a long time in the industry. Some of the newer techniques, like the stuff that's in the vogue right now around the generative AI, that is kind of new because typically we've used, as I said, more mathematical, numerical techniques, whereas that generative AI is focused on natural language. And we're exploring right now like some ways to use that, whether it's in an operator advisory or to share information among reliability or past experiences among like reliability or process experts or whatever it may be. So that actually is an area that's going to be new for us, whereas a lot of the other AI technology, I would say, it's kind of old hat, just to be blunt, for us in the process industries.
So give us some examples of how Emerson, you personally perhaps, are using automation to begin to think about decarbonization and really reduce carbon emissions.
Sure. And really, you know, it's all over the map in terms of which part of, you know, the energy transformation you want to talk about.
So all industries?
All industries. So let's start with, you know, existing energy industries or existing industrial facilities that are big energy consumers. Well, there, you know, what we have is the sensors, the software, the models, the digital twins and optimization software to help them actually optimize their energy consumption and other parts of their carbon footprint, including potentially like emissions. And again, that's something we've been doing for a long time. I actually, as a young automation engineer, one of the first projects I did was energy optimization at a pulp and paper mill, but that was totally financially driven, right? They had multiple fuels they could use, and depending on the cost, it was all just about get the lowest cost of energy, and all of the industries have had that as a goal. Now what we see that's different is, well, yes, we want the lowest energy cost, but also right. We want to lower our carbon footprint overall, so it's got a dual purpose. So for existing industries, that's probably the main thing we do in terms of coming in and helping them decarbonize.
Any industries jump out at you as ripe for massive change through automation and decarbonizing?
Well, there's massive change we can do for automation in other areas, I'd even say like reliability. But when we talk about decarbonization, the ones we probably are working with the most are the traditional oil and gas and petrochemical type industries, because they're big consumers of energy, not right. just the production of what they have, but a typical refinery will consume about 10% of the raw energy input, you know, in its operations to convert that to the finished suite of products. So there's a lot of big energy companies that are looking to lower what's called their scope one and scope two kind of emissions, right. their own energy consumption, and there's a lot of things we can do to help them.
Now, I have to admit, I'm really proud of a lot of things you've done, but one thing you're doing fascinates me because I love the work. I'm a lover of all things Forbes, and you're a member of the Forbes Technology Council. You recently wrote an article, fascinating to me, talked about how Emerson is designing, I guess let me look at the words, the next generation industrial architecture. Had to read it a couple of times to make sure I understood it. Talk about that and talk about what that does for manufacturing facilities.
Sure. So if you look at the industrial architecture that are in facilities today, even a relatively new one of 2 or 3 years, you know, a brand new facility of 2 or 3 years ago, it's actually an architecture that hasn't changed since the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. The last big transition that we went through in terms of software and computing technology that we applied in the automation space was moving to open systems, moving to, you know, Windows and Ethernet and Intel-based machines, instead of proprietary hardware and software that we used to do in the 80s and early 90s, for all of the functions above the base control. So the base control where the real fundamental control runs, very much like the engine management computer in your car, if you want to think of it that way, that still runs in a proprietary, purpose-built, real-time device because people want it to be redundant, they want high availability. But the rest of the architecture is typically Windows-based applications on open networking. But what we haven't done is taken advantage of the cloud. We haven't taken advantage of some of the new software technologies like containers that provide like portability of software. There's a lot of talk about the edge, if you've heard that mm-hmm. term. I mean, that's another one where we chuckle because that's where we live with the software and computers that we provide. But there's a lot that we can do to transform today's architecture that, as I said, is still basically 90s architecture into a more modern one, emulating a lot of the technology that's happened in IT. Frankly, in our space, a lot of that technology always starts in IT and then trickles down. We adopt it to what we're doing in the more critical applications we have. And the other big thing that we need to tackle is the data silos that we see typically in a facility. So we'll come in, we'll put in automation, we'll do a great job around having all the automation system in place, which is targeted largely at production. But there's a lot of other things that happen in those facilities. Reliability, now energy consumption like we talked about, quality teams that might have their own data, their own systems. Right. And now as people want to apply AI, as we talked about, they need to get at all that data, but they need to get at it in a common context where you can actually feed it into AI. So we have a lot of concepts and software that we're building that will make it a lot easier to look at all those aspects of operations, all those functions in a plant in a consistent manner and apply optimization looking at each one of those things, not just targeted at just an individual silo. Sorry, long explanation, but
really, really fascinating. And I encourage people to follow you on that Forbes Technology Council. You know, you talk a lot about automation, digitalization. I mean, my first thought goes to internet security and vulnerability. How do you navigate that threat as we move towards more and more data and more digitalization?
Yeah, that is an excellent question and is first and foremost on the minds of most of our customers and is, in fact, one of the reasons why they're slow sometimes to adopt technology like cloud, right? Because traditionally, our customers have all wanted to have their hands firmly on the software and the computers that were running their plant on-premise. But what we've done is, the first thing we do is we design all our products to some strict international standards. There's one called IEC 62443 that's been designed around cybersecurity, and it involves procedures in Azure who actually design and write the software, all the way through to rigorous testing for penetration and other cybersecurity vulnerabilities. But it's also a very different thing as you go to different parts of the world, and different industries have different standards. So the power industry, electrical generation industry, probably has the most rigid standards, because frankly, that's the one that the federal government is the most worried about foreign bad actors coming in and trying to attack. So there's even federal standards there that all of the power producers have to apply to and our products have to adhere to. But the oil and gas, the chemical companies, they're kind of right behind them with that on a concern. And so we're always building those core products to pass those standards. And it will trickle all the way down even to the field devices now, because the field devices also are moving to using more open protocols. So it's forefront of everything we do. It has to be, because it's a big concern now.
You have a great role, Chief Technology Officer at Emerson. I can only imagine all of the things you talk about. But you, in that role, you lead the innovation strategy for a major industrial player. What are y'all talking about around innovation, maybe inside your business or inside your partner's businesses that you think would be of interest to Path to Zero listeners?
Okay, you know, we're fascinated by all the innovation that's going on in chemical processing, frankly, right now. And I'm a chemical engineer by background and training, so I think it's a great time to be a chemical engineer, as everybody's trying to figure out, you know, how do we perfectly recycle plastics? How do we turn hydrogen into a valid energy source? You know, how do we, you know, come up with new techniques or reactions to decarbonize even existing processes? That's wonderful technology that we get to be a part of by being the automation supplier to those folks and get to get in on the ground floor and seeing them doing it. Inside of Emerson, that vision of the next generation architecture is obviously a big project for us. But some other areas I'd highlight is, you know, we pioneered the use of wireless technology for sensors about a decade ago, and have built a big portfolio there. And that's really important as customers look to do things like decarbonization or track energy usage, because most of the time they don't have the sensors they need for that. When they built the plant, they weren't thinking, oh, that's something I'm going to want to measure in the future, right? They were thinking about monitoring the product in the process. And that provides a very easy way to quickly add in the missing sensors that people may not have, versus having to string a pair of wires out to that they don't have out to a sensor. So that's one of the areas I would say that we've spent a lot on in the last 10 years. And the other area we see is a big opportunity for us, kind of above and beyond just automation, and I've mentioned already, is reliability. So you think of any facility that runs 24/7, and a lot of energy ones do, you know, they will put a lot of effort into maximizing the output using some of our optimization software, whatever. And then they have an unplanned shutdown and all that goes for naught, because all of a sudden they're not producing anything for 2 days or 3 days. So applying a lot of the same technology that we've applied in automation to close the loop, to get the sensor data, the algorithms, the software that can predict failures and prevent unplanned downtime, that's the next big profit opportunity for a lot of our customers, and we're very focused on that.
Fascinating. Keep going with all the innovation. That's great. All right, we have a little fun here now. We'd like to ask two fun questions. The first, we use magic. We really firmly believe in magic, and we'll hand you a magic wand. You use that magic wand for one thing in the next year that will impact climate change, sustainability. How would you use that wand, Peter?
Well, I'm going to give you an answer that I'm sure has been given before, because to me it's kind of the obvious one, which is I would go for full-scale fusion coming true. Right. I mean, and it's like I said, it's kind of an obvious thing, the next big no carbon, you know, low footprint thing. But let me elucidate a little more on that, why I even say that, because, you know, if we truly had, a massive scale, low cost, no carbon energy, that not only solves the energy problem, that solves a lot of problems.
Changes everything.
It changes everything. I mean, water as a problem in the globe today. Well, the recipe for clean water is seawater plus energy, right? So all of a sudden it would be a big thing to impact that. Another area that it would change dramatically is CO2. Why? Because, all right, we have CO2 capture technology, takes a lot of energy, takes a lot of cost, because the energy has a lot of cost. Frankly, if we had, low cost, relatively, infinite energy, we could do CO2 capture and pull the CO2 right back out of the atmosphere as a thing, if that's what we needed to do. That's
low cost, low carbon energy changes it all.
It changes many things, not just the energy equation, which is very obvious, and obvious in ways maybe that, you know, people don't think of in terms of, like, when you look at something like even using hydrogen or using molecules where you need that high density kind of energy. Again, that can be very inefficient. But again, if the energy is cheap and free and abundant, then you don't worry about how efficient it is so much. So it would be a big game changer.
Great use of your wand. Let me ask you, you're a technologist, you're a chemical engineer, you're playing that space. When is fusion going to be real in this country?
That's a great question, and I am absolutely unqualified to give a good answer on it. But But I've listened to a lot of people talk, and it's very. There was one guy at CERAWeek, the big energy conference, just I think year before last. He wanted to take a bet with anyone in the audience that he would have a positive power generating fusion plant on the grid by the end of this decade, by 2030, right? I don't know if anybody took him up on the bet. But then you read other things, and it's like, you know, we're still a long ways away. Even that recent breakthrough didn't take into account all the energy that went into driving the lasers. They just looked at the amount of energy the lasers produced, but they were pretty inefficient.
Microsoft entered a contract for, I think, 50 gigawatts of fusion-produced energy by 2028.
Yeah. It would change everything. But I don't know. My best guess would be 30 years.
Yeah. Where do you see fission nuclear power?
Now, I'm very...
You believe in small scale?
The renewables are great, but we need a new baseload technology.
None of it works without nuclear.
Yeah,
nuclear has to be...
I feel exactly the same way.
The contributor.
And the SMR technology, I'm back there cheering for that. You know, nuclear's got a PR, issue. Everybody recognizes that. Sometimes I would say unfounded. Sometimes humans are bad at assessing risk, because there's many studies that will show it's actually been the safest form of energy in terms of unit energy produced versus people actually injured. And, you know, the new technology would make it even safer, and the modular stuff would make it cheaper. I'm cheering for that, and that will happen before the fusion does.
Well, I'm cheering for your cheering, so that's good. All right, let's ask our other fun question. Let's see. Born and raised, I think, in New Hampshire.
Correct.
Live in a beautiful state of Texas now with some awesome forest in there. We want to plant a tree in honor of your time and expertise spent with us today. Where would you like us to plant that tree?
That's a great question. I guess I would say I would plant it on the city streets of Austin, because Austin needs more trees. It's hot there. It needs the shade. And the tree would be a sycamore tree, because that's one of my favorite trees.
It's a wonderful place to do it, a wonderful tree. We look forward to fulfilling your wish. Thank you very much for that. Anything else you'd love to tell our listeners about your work, things you're working on, things that Emerson's doing?
No, I think the one comment I would make is, I'm a career automation guy. I've been doing it for 37 years now. And I don't think it's a field that's appreciated sometimes about how many things it impacts and the variety of different skills that go into it. I would encourage all the young engineers listening here to consider automation as a career. How about that?
It's awesome. Really appreciate you spending time with us today. Good luck at the rest of the Reuters conference, and thanks for your time and expertise.
It's been great to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Path to Zero with Tucker Perkins. If you like what you've heard, subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcast app. You can email us with questions or comments to pathtozero@propane.com.